I'm going to. We've got about 10-15 minutes for questions. Over 10 minutes, I think, and I'm going to try and plough through them. We've got quite a few questions that have come in by in the question box, and I think that's probably going to be the easiest way to pick any up. I'd like to run through those now and try and pick out one of the panelists to answer. And the first question we had in was from Remco Fisher, and a good question on whether we have an indication of what the composition of the U.S. $100 billion figure by 2020 will be. And Eric, I think maybe best to just hand over to you quickly on that one.
I just replied on that actually. I didn't know whether it got to everybody or not. But no, there's no clarity yet on the actual balance. I think one thing to remember is that this is by 2020. So the first task is to decide how you're going to get there and what actually is going to catalyze that. And you know, my personal view is that you need something new in the form of some kind of large-scale government-backed climate asset, some kind of fixed income product springs to mind that can be a benchmark, and you can price a lot of private sector products off of it. That would be my answer.
You mentioned that investors were able to get some input into some of that discussion at the moment as it's being looked at before the end of April. What are the mechanisms for that, and are any investors doing that at present?
I think I'd turn that question over to Ollie, actually. Okay. He's the expert.
Yeah. Fair enough. Ollie. Can you hear okay, Ollie?
Did you hear
the question okay, Ollie?
Yeah, I'm quite consistent on being clumsy with the technique here. What we are trying to do as an investor network at VIDCC is actually to address policymakers and to try to enter into all the windows of opportunity that's offered to us. Whether that turns out to be a systematic dialogue is another question. We try to talk to the UNFCCC, we try to talk to national governments, to the European Commission, and together we team up with the sister networks in North America and Australia and New Zealand to do this. But we have seen over the past year or two that probably in before that, it took quite a while to get through to somebody at the other end of the line with communication to the policy community. But we see more and more often, and happily so, that we are called upon to comment on different issues. But whether that dialogue is systematic, whether the information we provide actually thinks in and is digested and leads to concrete policy influencing, I would turn that question back to Eric.
We could be playing question tennis here. Are investors involved in the design of the Green Climate Fund, Eric, at the moment, to your knowledge?
Well, I think...
Are they being listened to, if you like?
I think the key is what Ollie said, that is it systematic, and is there an absolute, you know, agreed channel for this, and I think it's. I think the answer is that it is ad hoc.
Right. Okay. Is there likely to be anything done about whether the ad hoc nature of that at all?
Well, I think it's you know, it's pressure, it's continuous pressure that gets the advance, and also, you know, there's the structural issue of which bits of the government you address. So, is addressing the process of climate negotiations directly the best way, or rather, you know, at this stage, is it better to try to get a proper dialogue going with the finance ministry? So there's a political aspect to this as well.
Don't mention it. Yeah, front. Okay. I'm going to move on to the next question. I'd like to try and get through as many of these questions as we can, as quickly as we can. A question from Marina Iadis. Can you please tell us something on the developments around RED and RED Plus as part of international offset mechanisms? Eric, maybe you, a quick word on what the development was on RED at Cancun.
I think it was expansive but not so robust. And I think there's a lot of work that still needs to be done on it, to be honest. So the will is there, but again, the structure around which these things will go forward is still, to a certain extent, the objective is to start setting up the so-called reference levels. In other words, how are you going to measure the impact of action that is taken? But that's pretty sort of still at an initial stage in the chain.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for that, Eric. Question for Bruce. Does it mean that thanks to the state level policy development, the U.S. can exceed the target pledged under the Copenhagen Agreement? I guess that means do advances in state policy mean that the U.S. can exceed targets pledged under the Copenhagen Agreement?
That's a good question, and we have not estimated that per se. However, we did do some modeling work last year that demonstrated the roll-off of coal-fired power plants and the replacement of those power plants with natural gas. And if you look at the amount of CO2 emissions from a natural gas-fired electrical generation facility, it is significantly lower than that of coal. And we estimated out to 2030 that our emissions would be coming down very significantly. So that being said, the U.S. energy sector, the U.S. energy industry will continue to increase the amount of renewables based on state-level policies, but they're going to also be shifting from coal to gas, and that will also play a significant role, we think, in the national emissions reduction targets.
Uh-huh.
And that model can be found again on our website.
Okay, thanks for that, Bruce. A question from Hazel Henderson. What are your, this can go across the panelists and maybe whoever wants to jump in. What are your responses to reports, including that put out by Mercer recently, the investment consultant, calling for institutional investors to shift 40% of their portfolios towards green sectors? I probably shouldn't ask you that, Bruce, because I'm sure you'll disagree with it.
We think that the allocation targets that Mercer put out were very instructive in that when looking at how current investments are deployed, oftentimes it is a very small percentage of one's total assets, and it's usually in a specific themed fund. So if you're going to go from less than 2% of your allocation to climate change up to 5 or 6% of your allocation deployed to climate change, and then what Mercer recommends is up to 25%, that can make a significant difference. And we did some quantitative modeling on that in the year 2010 and issued a report that showed that depending on how you diversify it across your asset classes, whether it's public equity, private equity, infrastructure, you are going to maintain your target return. And that was a quantitative model we ran to demonstrate that that would work. We think that that's very important. But another message from the Mercer report was that we also need to be thinking at the asset owners need to be thinking at the portfolio level as well as to how climate change is going to be impacting all of their assets. So, if an asset owner just simply buys a clean tech fund with less than 1% of their assets, is that moving the needle? Is that really managing their risks?